And we are
Oh,
live.
sweet. Cool.
Craig, the son of a bitch, finally decided to do his job. Thanks, Craig. Fucking robots. What's up, everybody? It's Hefe.
Danny.
And we are here today to discuss something that is near and dear to both of our hearts, because we've both experienced it. We've lived it. Suicide. It's kind of funny that... You hit us up this morning. You're like, hey, I want to talk about something, because I've been I've been dealing with helping some of my own close friends with sharing my experience and like sort of a lifesaver, you know, throwing out the old lifesaver to a lot of guys. And it just seems like no matter how much you talk about it, you have to continue to reengage it and be authentic with it, because people aren't. You're not ready to hear something until you're ready to hear something. That's my experience. And I will talk about it all day, every day to everybody if it means that we can save one more life. But yeah. I'll let you start the episode, good sir.
I think, you know, I had this idea because I've talked about this in depth when I've written blogs before. Based on, I don't know if you saw the message in the inbox this morning, but... one, it's not an individual I know personally, but somebody who I've had a lot of correspondence with in the course of doing social media, and seeing his message, it came in last night. I saw it this morning. He said he went back through and listened to some of our podcasts, but basically he started off with, look, man, I'm struggling, and I don't know if I can keep doing this. I don't know if I have the will to keep living. And yeah, this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. And I said, you know what? Let me talk about this in depth, what I have struggled with, and give some thoughts that when I wrote them out in a blog, I don't know, maybe a year ago. I think it was a year ago. Yeah. People readily accepted that. And I had a lot of folks who were struggling reach out and say, thank you. You voiced it in a way that I've been trying to say. This is what I've been trying to communicate to people. And I want to talk about it. I want to talk about my past, what I've struggled with. And I don't know what you're willing to share, Hefe, like as far as your personal life, but.
Oh, man, yeah. I'll share everything.
Cool. Well, let me go back. Feel free to interject and jump in. I kind of had a simple outline in my head of what I wanted to talk about, but. I will go right back to the beginning of my career. I mean, I'm literally in AIT, and my brother kills himself. And it was a terrible transition for me, because I'm away from everything I knew. I'm on this new journey. I'm on this new path. My brother, who was military himself, he was out at that time, but he had been my biggest lifeline, one of my best friends. Just somebody who, when you talk about looking up to a big brother, he was it. Yeah, he did a lot of awful things that brothers do to each other. He beat the shit out of me in my life. He, you know, we fought, we did everything you can imagine, but I loved him with, I mean, every ounce of my being. And I was home on Christmas leave. I came back, and the lights were on in my house. It was 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, out doing New Year's Eve stuff. And I come in and my parents are awake, and I walk in and it's like this real weird atmosphere. They're up in the kitchen, and I'm like, what's going on? What are you guys doing up? And they're like, yeah, well, something happened. And I can just feel how bad it is, you know, that air in the room. And I looked at them, I kind of froze, and I was like, did somebody die? And they're like, you know, don't you? I was like, no, what? What are you talking about? And they're like, why don't you come on upstairs? So I come up there, and I see my brother's picture on the table. And, you know, just the nightmare began at that point. The shock and the realization set in, but the nightmare began then. And I won't explain to you all the emotions that went into it and all the grieving. But let me give you a chance to talk. And I'll continue on with that in a little bit.
Yeah, no problem. For me, anybody that knows me knows that I grew up really fucked up. If you can imagine the most horrible things a child could see or be experience in their life, every type of abuse, that's what I went through. So I never had a solid understanding of what it means to have. I never had a foundational cornerstone of like, wow, this is what being loved and nurtured is. Really fucked up. And when I joined the military, that was the first real sense of true family I ever experienced. I learned to play catch in Iraq with my squad. I learned the importance of my value was directly tied to how well I performed, because I would get, you know, I experienced positive reinforcement for the first time. You work out, you run, you learn how to lead, you go to the boards. Everything that I experienced in the military led me to believe that my value to this organization was always built on the fact that I could perform and continue to do good. When I was a child, when I was a kid growing up, experiencing abuse, like there was nothing that I could do to not get abused, if that makes any sense. I didn't have an understanding of like, my entire being was, I'm just a beast of burden. I'm going to get abused in every manner, in every way, just purely because the sadistic person is in, who's in charge of me. So I never had any like good understanding of value and love until I came to the military. That's why war for me is such a weird thing, because I experienced so many great things, but also experienced so many unbelievably horrible, tragic experiences. And that's ultimately a really fucked up way to live. You only experience love and camaraderie when you enter the military, because you didn't have that anywhere else in your life. And it led me to believe that no matter what I do, I can't fail at this, because this is the only thing that has ever showed me that I'm valuable, that I'm wanted, that I'm needed, and the only time I've had some sort of healthy understanding of what love is. You work hard for your brothers, you take care of them, and you're willing to die for them, they'll do the same. Now, mind you, there were many times where that was proved wrong, which ultimately led me to be like, okay, fuck this organization. I'm going to go to soft, because I hear over there, it's a team. Always hear about a team life. And when you're a kid at Bragg and growing up as a paratrooper, and you hear about these mythical Green Berets that, you know, they're just a team by themselves taking on the world, and nothing means more than team life, and how much these guys will take care of each other and be there for each other. And I said to myself, like, okay, well, that's family. I've never really truly experienced that. So I'm tired of getting lied to by this organization, Conventional Army, and having leaders that ultimately won't put their life on their line, won't do what they preach. You know, I had two influential leaders, bad leaders, that made me realize, like, okay, this isn't an organization that values me, and they're willing to do everything they can to take care of me. I had a PL that quit. Then I had a platoon sergeant, same thing, quit. Just first time they're put under pressure, they just fall apart. And I'm like, these guys are expecting me to fucking put my life on the line, yet they're not doing the same. Fuck that. This is reminds me a lot of, you know, the childhood of being exploited, being used, and not having people that really gave a fuck. So I bounce out of that, go to selection, and then ultimately make it into SF. And it's like, holy shit, it's real. Like, this is a real family. Like, these guys, no matter what the fuck you do, they will be there for you. They will take care of you. You will take care of them. And I bought that hook, line, and sinker. And ultimately, my mentality was, this is family. This is what caring for others is like, this is what really matters. I can't fail this. I can't fail at this. I have to continue pushing and give everything I have for this organization. And it just continued to snowball into a very abusive relationship again, because I put everything in front of everything that was about my job, everything that was about SF came first. There's that big myth that they used to tell guys, which was true. You're not truly a Green Beret till you have a Harley, your first divorce, and a drinking problem.
Right.
And that was so very fucking true. It was really toxic. And again, not having a frame of reference of what a healthy relationship, healthy family life is like, with boundaries and understanding that, like, yes, work's important, but that's not your family. Ultimately, friends and family are built within the service, outside the service. It's not just this team life, this idea that you're chasing, this work idea that it's encompassing everything in your life. And it continued to get worse and worse and worse until I did get a divorce, until I was drinking heavily, until I was definitely using every sort of excuse to say that this job, this idea was the most important thing in my life. Like, I vilified everything that said, or anybody that said anything contradicting that SF and team life wasn't the most important thing. You know, I would watch, I was really bitter when guys would leave. When guys would leave, especially if they were within the same peer group. I was so bitter when I would see some guys leave after one trip. Or they maybe just they had one South America trip. They had one. I'm like, what the fuck did you do? Are you fucking kidding me? You're going to quit on the family? You're quitting on this? Like, get the fuck out of here. I was so bitter because I built this idea that this was the one fucking thing that you should never quit on. Because when you don't have a good frame of reference of what love, what family is, you just fucking latch on to the first positive thing. And for me, it was finally getting that team life. And as the years progressed, as time went on, I let myself physically deteriorate and mentally. I wouldn't go see medical professionals when I had an injury. I wouldn't go, because God forbid I have to take a knee. God forbid I can't make it on this trip. God, like, I would never fail my team. I can never look at my team sergeant and tell him I can't go because I'm in pain. Like, there were so many schools I went to that I shouldn't have gone to because I wasn't in the right mental space, because I wasn't physically fit, but I continued to push and lie. And ultimately, here I am finally in leadership position on a team and experience an injury. Actually, by this point, it's three injuries that are catastrophic, and I'm not willing to take a knee. Now, I can justify it because, hey, I'm in combat. I can't take a knee here. But now I'm taking massive amounts of painkillers just so that I can function. But I'm telling myself, that's what you do for family. That's what you do for these guys. Mm-hmm. You love these guys. They're your everything. These dudes and this job, being leadership on a detachment, being in this combat rotation is your everything. This is your what you've been waiting for. You've been working your ass off to be the guy that these boys can rally around and count on to keep them safe, and count on being there to fucking say, no, this is stupid, we shouldn't do this, or at least be there to take care of them when they need help. Because I can justify that. If I can take care of my guys, that's fine. I can take care of them. They need mental health. They need to go to the hospital to get these injuries. You know, so I was basically doing everything I could to be that supportive mama bear, to be that fucking grizzly mother. And because, believe it or not, the most fucking ferocious animal out there is a fucking grizzly bear mom with her cubs. Like, that's the fucking truth. And that's how I was. That was my mentality. Like, you're not going to fuck with my boys. You're not going to fuck with my dudes. I'm going to make sure they're taken care of. I'm going to make sure they get everything that I knew deep down, like, I should be getting this. But I'm a leader. I got to take care of my dudes. And then you continue to do that, and you realize they're just going to continue cycling new dudes. Your team life, the guys you bond with, like, that shelf life is not as long as people think. You get a great team, 2-3 years. Seniors rotate out. New juniors come in. Guys go fucking on orders of SWCC. And now you're having to do that for another batch of fucking dudes. But then you're not healthy enough. You can't continue running. You can't continue rucking. Now, everything that you thought was your fucking concrete pillar, your being, you can't achieve. You can't do. You can't fucking hang in there with young 20-somethings. What are you going to do? How am I going to continue doing this? I'll keep taking painkillers. I'll keep drinking alcohol to numb the pain. I'll keep pushing through the anxiety and depression until you get to the point where it's like, fuck this. I am a fraction of what I used to be. I can't perform. I can't lead from the front. I am worthless to not only this organization, but ultimately to me and my own core values. So I'm going to end it, because I'd rather end my life than live as a fragment of what I used to be. And meanwhile, you're not saying this to anybody. You're not reaching out to anybody because you're so scared of being vulnerable. You're so fucking scared of looking to the people that you care about the most and saying, I'm not okay. Because you don't want them to see you as a human being. You want them to see you as fucking Hefe. The dude that will always have the answer. The dude that's going to always have their back. The dude that's going to fucking move ground, earth, fucking wind to make shit happen for them. You don't want them to see you as a fucking human being. So you'd rather continue to fight with depression at home, alienate your wife, alienate your closest friends, sit in your depression, go through gut-wrenching anxiety every day because somebody's going to find out that you're experiencing ungodly amounts of pain. They're going to see you have a mental breakdown in the parking lot, which happened multiple times. Like, so you finally come up with this plan that it's like, it's going to be better for you to just end your life. And the only fucking thing that kept me from doing that, the only thing that kept me from doing that were the idea that maybe I'm more than just this. My wife loves me. My wife's constantly there for me. Maybe it's not okay to do this.
Yeah.
Maybe there's that one little percent in the back of your mind that's like, no, there's this amazing woman that chose me. And if she's there every single day telling me that she loves me, she's there for me, I got to reach out to somebody. I got to talk to somebody. Right. That's what saved me.
I like what you said about the family aspect, because talking about where I was at as that young 19-year-old who had just joined the military, brother died. I didn't know. I was still in shock. So when I went back to AIT, obviously folks knew what had happened. And when the shock kind of started wearing off and the numbness started rolling in, I was devastated. I did not know how I was going to live life.
Yeah.
Anybody who's lost somebody knows what that is. And I just didn't know how I was going to go on. My life as I knew it was gone. I also didn't have, I didn't go through what you went through growing up, but, my mom was not good. We'll just leave it at that. My mom was not good. And, I had nobody at that point. And so I was forced to latch on to these dudes who were brand new to me, barely knew each other, but the Army became my family. It did.
Yeah.
The Army became my family, and it was really fucked up family, like you described.
Yeah.
A lot of a lot of toxicity in a lot of ways, but my dudes, my guys were solid, and for years they were there for me. I'll tell you this because I want to talk about this later as well, but about 2 or 3 years in, I'd say about 2 years into the 82nd, it was my first duty station. I was having panic attacks, and I didn't realize, well, not panic attacks. They weren't full blown, but I was hyperventilating, and I didn't know what was going on. I was just having a hard time breathing. And I went to the doc, and he basically looked at me and he's like, dude, you have a lot of stress in your life, a lot of anxiety. And, you know, you look back at that now, a lot of stress in my life. Well yeah, dumb question, right? But anyways, I didn't know what I didn't know. And he told me, he's like, I think you're hyperventilating. And he prescribed me an anti-anxiety drug. And I said, fuck it. And I took it. And it worked. And I liked it. And I'll tell you, I stopped taking it. I broke it cold turkey because being, I don't know, 20, 21 years old, I referred to them as crazy drugs. I did not want to be on crazy drugs. I didn't want to be that guy that had to rely on medicine to make me right. So I get out of the military and I realized how dependent I was on that structure, on that system, on those people, because I didn't relate to people on the outside. Yeah. I know a lot of you know this. A lot of you know this. You get out and you're like, dude, I don't connect with these people, especially the dudes who went through the GWAT era, guys who were rolling, doing, you know, back-to-back deployments in the worst kind of shit. And we hear all the cliches about being left in the desert and never fully leaving. And it's true, because you get locked into this world. It's even though it's a terrible world, it's the world that you're comfortable with. And, you know, you've got your dudes, you've got your sights, sounds, smells, all these things. And you come back to the quote unquote real world, civilized world. You get out and you're supposed to integrate into society, and people tell you, no, that's not appropriate. You can't do that. But you're used to, I know everybody out there does this if they've been in long enough, the dark humor to cope, to relate with dudes. I remember I started heavily after my brother died, and it was just that really dark, effed up humor that would make people just cringe and be like, yo, man, that's like, geez, your brother's dead, man. Like, maybe you shouldn't joke. But that was how I dealt with it. I couldn't break down and cry. I didn't know what emotion to feel. I was living in a nightmare, and dark humor was how I began to connect. And then when you go through the deployments and you deal with all that shit, it becomes a part of who you are. The rest of the world doesn't see that. They don't know how to cope with that. And so when you bleed into civilian life, you're like, dude, I don't relate to these people. I shouldn't be judgmental right now. I shouldn't be looking at this dude and being like, you're a faggot, dude, because you're, you know, this or that, or you're too happy, or you're too sappy, or, oh, this dude's too good of a dad, or this dude's too nice of a husband and he treats his wife well, or, you know, he's really nice to people. And you're like, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. But I look at that and it grosses me out, because I'm like, dude's a pussy, man. Yeah. This guy needs to sack up and like, stop being such a little bitch. But that's me. that was the awful inside of me that didn't know how to relate with good in the world anymore. And it drew me further back into that shell. And so, you know, I go through the years, same thing, fucked up marriage, bad relationships. And I ended up going through a really bad separation, divorce. And, you know, I'll tell you, without hitting all the details of that, what saved me, and it was actually my brother's death that saved me, because I had a daughter at that point. And I remember coming off of a Thanksgiving break. I had just had my daughter for like a week and a half, and I'm sitting there in my apartment. I'm a sergeant first class. No, actually I had I had already made it. I was a warrant officer at that point. That's right. Yeah, I was a warrant officer at that point. A new W-1, and I was sitting there. I'd been through so much bad shit. I had been fucking and drinking myself stupid for a year and a half, just trying to cope, just trying to survive. It was terrible living in this constant cycle of getting drunk and making terrible choices with just random people and trying to make relationships work that obviously were not going to work because there was nothing in my head that was right. And what ended up transpiring was I'm sitting there, I've drank an entire bottle of whiskey, I've got my gun in my hand, round in the chamber, and I've got this thing against my head, and I'm connecting to, you know, just life flashing before your eyes. I can't even describe it. I was drunk out of my mind. I do remember this one thought, though. I remember the brutal, agonizing, screeching nightmare that ripped through me instantly when I walked up those stairs and saw my brother's picture on the table. I remember that. To this day, I can remember that emotion of feeling what I felt, a living nightmare. And I thought to myself, I said, all at once, I'm talking all in a split second, things that you don't even know how to describe it. I thought of putting my daughter through that and what she would go through when somebody else had to explain to my daughter that her dad wasn't coming back, that, you know, that, and what I would put her through because I couldn't deal with things. And I stopped and I went and got help. I had gotten help before, but this time I was like, I can't. And I got help and I went through a journey and a path, but I tell people all the time, like where I'm at now in my life, I say, you know, every day is a blessing. And I mean that truly, because every day that I'm here is an extra day. I was supposed to be dead that day. And what brought me back from the brink was that realization of what I would put the person I love the most through.
Yeah.
That same thing that I had gone through. And I said, I'm not going to do that to her. And I have more kids now. I'm remarried. And that's great. That's my journey. But at the same time, I can tell you the devastation of suicide is unfathomable to those who love you. It is. I've experienced a lot of death, but nothing like suicide from someone you love.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's true. A lot of times going through our depression, we tend to believe and we train ourselves to believe that we are alone, we are dispensable, that no one's going to miss us, no one's going to care, and that's going to be further from the truth. You have people out there, and I'm talking to everybody out there, all of you, you have a vast network of people that love and care about you. You're just in a place of deep depression and pain, and you're actively telling yourself, nope, no one fucking loves me. I'm all by myself. And I don't care how bad and horrible you've been. I don't care if you're dealing with demons from addiction. I don't care if you're dealing with all those horrible shit that that tend to affect all of us veterans and military service members. You're not unlovable. There are people that no matter how bad it's gotten, they still care and love you. And ultimately, if you make that rash decision and end your life, you're going to impact and hurt so many people.
Well, yeah. And let me say this to the other side of the audience. For those of you who are out there who aren't struggling with depression or are not in that place currently, and you know people who are, this is one of the things that I wrote about in that blog that I was talking about earlier that resonated with so many people. Listen, somebody who is in the deep, deep bowels of depression and wanting to kill themselves is not going to reach out. You say, just reach out, man. Just reach out. I'm always here. Oh, why didn't that person reach out? They don't want to reach out. Mm-hmm. They are so deep, so so gone that guess what? Guess what reaching out meant to me? First of all, the couple of times that I did make kind of a half-hearted effort. Give me a second. I think my computer cut out. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, but gotcha.
Okay. The couple of times that I did make an effort, I didn't feel like anybody truly cared. And it was this, you know, you reach out, you, sorry, that really distracted me there. You reach out, you make somewhat of an effort, and people don't reciprocate it and come running to you, and you're like, oh, well, nobody's listening anyways, nobody cares. It does take some personal effort on your part, but continuing on with what I was saying to everybody else is, they're not going to reach out, because if they reach out, then you'll stop them. You'll make the effort to get in their life, and they don't want to be stopped. They want to die. That's why they're suicidal. I'm not talking about the small cries for help. I'm not talking about the I'm going through a rough patch and the idea has entered my head once or twice. I'm talking about the dudes who are seriously like putting a calendar date in their phone to go home and suck start a pistol. They don't want to be stopped. And that's where it's on you to not say things like, why didn't that person reach out? And why didn't they, know? And go and insert yourself in their life. I can tell you in those moments, I would have loved for somebody, anybody, I don't even care who, just somebody to come over, knock on the door and be like, what's up, dude? I'm going to watch a movie and your house is now my house. And I'd be like, what? And they'd be like, yeah, I'm not going anywhere. So I don't know, do whatever you want, but I'm going to chill out on your couch for a while and do whatever I want. And
we're having tacos.
Yeah. And you know what? It doesn't matter what they say in response, because you know that's where they're at. And you're saying, nope, that's what I'm going to do, because you mean more to me than that. And I'm not going to let you do something stupid. And here I am. And you have no choice. You want to fight about it? Let's fight. I'll kick your ass. And then you'll still, you know, be stuck here with me. So let me know how it is. That's what dudes want. That's what I wanted. They're not going to cry out for help because they want to die. And that's where you come in. And that's where you make that effort to inject in their lives.
That's exactly it. You have to, we talk about every soldier is a sensor. Every man and woman has to have the responsibility of being on the lookout and on the alert. Well, that goes directly hand in hand with preventing suicides. Know your friends. Be an active participant. Now more than ever, we have every sort of social media connection tool. And yeah, and we can go on for hours about fucking Facebook and Instagram, but whatever. Use it for good. Reach out. Set up a Discord channel with your friends. Retired, in and out. I'm telling you. Text messages, photo, meme sharing saves fucking lives. I have a pillar. I have a tripod that I am connected to every single day. These two individuals have been in my life since fucking my first deployment. And even though I don't get to see them every day, even though I don't get to fucking, I haven't even seen one of them in over a decade, because he's got a kid, he's got a complicated work life. We talk every single day, and we are there for each other, and we are struggling with real world shit. But we have this fucking commitment to each other where it's like, I'm not going to do this without you guys. I'm not going to fucking sit here and make these rash decisions. And when I wasn't messaging them, when I wasn't sending the right type of funny memes, they fucking knew. They were some of the first people that knew that I was going into treatment. There were some of the few brothers I had that knew right away, okay, something's wrong. What's going on? Like, they know my entire... I shared with them my entire trauma history before I was able to share it with my wife. Because they knew me longer. Because I know everything about them just like they should know everything about me. And that's brotherhood. That's ultimately what all of us can build. You know, I know it's hard being vulnerable. I know it's hard being open to discuss the painful shit that we deal with. But you're not alone. And the more you talk, the more you're able to convey the amount of pain and the issues you're going through, the easier it is to get the help, the easier it is to seek out the answers. Because while you're in that mode of depression and isolation, you want your world to be so fucking small. I lived that. I would long for the moments where I could just be at home. And then it turned from just being at home to being in my office. Then it turned from being in my office to only being in my bedroom. The smaller my world got, the better. And that's a sick part of depression and isolation. It tricks us into feeling like that's what we really want. That's what we really need.
Yes.
When we need the absolute fucking opposite. You need to be surrounded by fucking friends, people that love you. And being able to say, just honestly, I'm fucking hurting. As men, and there are women that do it too, we are so against crying and being vulnerable and showing what really hurts us. But I'll completely be okay with telling somebody, I will die for you tomorrow. When we go to war, when that fucking ramp drops on that fucking 47 and we walk into the unknown, I'm fucking going there. I'm fighting right next to you. And if we die, we fucking die together. But for some reason, for some crazy reason, I can't go to one of my closest friends and be like, I'm fucked up, man. I'm hurting because I feel like I am letting everybody down because I can't physically keep up. And I'm having this anxiety that I'm only value added if I can do A, B, and C. But if we did that, if we actually did that to the people that love and care about us, they'll look at us dead in the eye and say, dude, everybody gets hurt. You need to take a time out. You need to sit down and realize that your value is not just this. I value as a brother. Your value is not just the fucking hat you wear when you're here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I had this incredibly freeing mindset from what I went through when I was on the brink of killing myself to now. And what I'll tell you is exactly what Hefe just said about you die for your brothers, but you can't open up to them. A lot of that, at least in my personal experience, is from shame. The shame of not measuring up, of being something you're not supposed to, maybe having done things you shouldn't have. I have a lot of shame. I had a lot of shame, not anymore. I don't care. That's what I went through. But I had a lot of shame in the drinking and the rampant amount of sex I was having, because it went counter to my values. It went counter to who I was as a person. And I was ashamed of that. And I eventually told people about it, and it was freeing. But what I can tell you now on this side of the fence is there's nothing I'm scared of. Yeah, I have a fear of something happening to my kids or my wife. I think that's perfectly normal. But as far as like consequences for any of my behavior or actions or what somebody can use as leverage against me or hold over me, nothing. Because I always tell myself, the worst thing you can do to me is kill me. Other than that, I mean, I've already been there. And every day is a blessing from here on out. So when we say, reach out and tell somebody, reach out and tell somebody. What do you have to lose? You're going to kill yourself anyways. So just tell somebody. And if it doesn't work, then so be it. You're exactly where you were, but maybe it does work. maybe reaching out and telling somebody, or you tell somebody and they don't handle it right, tell somebody else. You know, a lot of people, and I'll tell you this to the other side of the fence, stop trying to fix problems. Don't try to fix your buddy's problems. Just be there for them. Mm-hmm. They don't need you to tell them like, oh man, you got a good life. You got a good wife. You got people that love you. Stop. That shit is not pulling him back from the brink of destruction. Just be there for him. Be in his life. Be the friend he needs. Stop trying to fix his problems. That's, I don't know how to expound on it any more than that. It's hard to.
I'll help you with that. We, as men, we are fixers. That's one of the things. If you've ever done marriage counseling, if you've ever done any sort of individual counseling, you realize there's the attitude of like your wife comes home, tells you a problem. You're like, well, what you need to do is fucking tell Cindy to shut the fuck up. No, man. Active listener. Be there. Compassionate. Listen to your friend. And then be the first one that's willing to be courageous enough to say, hey, we have resources we can reach out to. We have people that can help us overcome these things. I think we should fucking reach out together. I'll walk over there with you to mental health. We'll go first thing in the morning. You're not going to do this alone. I'll be there with you. That was the scariest fucking part. When I finally nutted up and went and got help, it's a very vulnerable situation because there's not another teammate with you there saying, all right, brother, me and you, we're going here to this fucking office and we're going to get you the help you need. And we're, it's, you're by yourself and you're just like, fuck. And for a little bit, it feels even worse because everything that has ever been told to you by your NCO support structure, your sergeant majors, everybody that raised you was always telling you it's the last fucking thing you want to do. You got a problem, you go home and you fucking drink about it. Last fucking thing you want to do is go tell these fucking shrinks that there's something wrong with your fucking brain housing group, because then you won't be able to go to fucking CivSic, fucking ADIC, you won't be able to do any of the fucking schools, and I need you to be ready to go any moment. So if you got problems at home, just fucking go home and drink about it. Just like me, man. We'll fucking kick back a couple 12-packs and then we'll fucking ride home in our Harleys. Wrong fucking answer, dude. Wrong fucking answer. Right now, this day and age, whether you're soft or fucking conventional, you have access to so many fucking resources. And I'll tell you right now from personal experience, those civilians, those doctors, truly give a fuck about you. They do. I've had so many fucking doctors be there for me. Give me their fucking cell phone. Hey, if you need me, if you need to come in, if you need, hey, reach out. Any fucking moment, reach out. And these are people that have everyday lives. They're more superheroes than we tend to think. These people care. And they're civilians. These people have an invested interest in making sure that you survive, that you make it through this, not because they're getting paid, but they're just genuinely good fucking people. But the myth that we've been given, the myth that we've been told is utilizing these resources is going to end our careers. It's going to deter us. It's going to keep us from reaching whatever fucking professional level we want to aspire for. And that's not right. That's not fucking true. I went there very guarded. I went there thinking that these people were going to have big armies interest first. And that's 100% the opposite. Every therapist I've made friends or not met along the way, every doctor, every professional occupational therapist has looked at me as like an individual, has taken an interest in my development and my journey. And I never in that path was there a green suitor. Never in that path was there a Green Beret mentor. And that's ultimately what we need. We need to be the fucking mental health mentors for our own guys. We need more people to go get help and be yelling and promoting and advocating for these resources. That's ultimately, like, that's what I do when I go to work. If I see somebody that I even think is having a problem, I reach out. I don't care if he's going to look at me like I'm a fucking kook, because I'm like, hey, man, you all right? Hey, what's going on? You seem kind of off. No, fuck that. I'd rather have somebody think that I'm some overly caring fucking new world fucking hippie than be this cold, hard ass individual that walks around all day with a stern look on his face and doesn't engage with people. And it's already worked. I've already been able to influence people to go get help. That's a fucking win in my book.
Yeah. Like, I agree. What I'll say with that is, with the mental health aspect and the professionals, is what I said earlier about the drugs. You got to swallow your pride, get over the stigma of medicine or crazy drugs or whatever funny label you want to put on it, and say, hey, I'll tell you, at 40 years old, this is what I care about. I care about living an awesome life. I have kids. I have a wife. I don't care about anything else except living an awesome life and watching my kids grow up, and I don't know, all the stuff that goes into that, being a good person and all that shit. But when it comes to the medicine, get over the stigma of it, get over the shame of it. I take stuff, and I don't take stuff for depression. I wish I would have, but I take stuff because I was at a point where it was affecting my current marriage. It was affecting my ability to be a father, because I wasn't depressed, but I was dead inside. And I'm sure a lot of you can relate to this, but I wasn't suicidal. I didn't have anxiety. I didn't have anything. I was just dead inside. I felt nothing. People were like, well, that's what depression is. No, I was not depressed. I was just fine. I just had no enthusiasm for anything, nothing. And does this upset you? No. Does this make you happy? No. As blasé and bland as you can possibly be, I was dead inside. And I didn't know how to fix that. I wanted to have life again. So I went to the doc. He hooked me up with some pills. And guess what? They worked.
Yeah.
And it took me from being below the cloud cover to being above the cloud cover. You know, when you're flying through a storm, or you're taking off through a storm, and you're crawling up through the dark, and you're like, oh man, it's crazy outside. And then you pop up over the cloud cover and you're like, oh shit, the sun's out. Beautiful. That medicine allowed me to pop above the cloud cover and get perspective and see the world again in a way that I wasn't able to do on my own. That shit works. Don't turn it away. We have medicine now that can help you. Take advantage of it.
Yeah. For me, it was a very holistic approach. So first thing, obviously, I went and got help, started seeing my therapist, and then we addressed the medicine. And that was the same way. I'm very hesitant. I thought it was going to change me in a way where I wouldn't recognize who I was. Others would be able to notice it. And I had all these fucking myths in my head. And begrudgingly started taking a medication. And I did feel some change. But when it really changed, when it really finally clicked, this was when I wasn't just addressing my problems with therapy or with medication alone, but cognitive behavioral therapy, medication, and working with a therapist, and then my own research and application of other things like grounding, mindfulness, meditation, built this wonderful fucking holistic approach to treating my issues that ultimately gave me the spark that I didn't have again. that I had lost, and it brought it back to me. And I remember to this day the moment where it finally clicked in. For a long time, everything was just like you said, everything was numb. I thought it was a byproduct of the medication. And I thought it was just like, okay, this is what my life's going to be like. And then I went inpatient. And somewhere along the third week and going into that fourth week and practicing the tools that I was getting, going through the classes, I finally woke up with this fucking spark inside of like, holy fucking shit, I want to go to the gym. Like, I want to journal. I want to write. I want to read. I felt alive. And more than in a way that I hadn't felt alive before with just the medication and just the therapy. It was being able to combine everything. It was truly, to put it in a very elementary term, it was like, remember Captain Planet? Oh, all yeah. all the little fucking kids. You had the little native kid from... exactly. All those things combined gave me back Hefe, gave me back me. Like, I need the little Indian dork. I needed the little friggin' gingerhead kid. I needed all those things combined to bring me back to who I was.
Yeah.
And it truly, for me, it was one of those things where, like, if you have a thirst for knowledge in any other discipline, you're going to seek it out. You're going to go read books about it. If you want to be the best archer, you're going to read and watch YouTube and become very dedicated in that skill set, because it's a skill set that requires understanding of so many mechanics and so many different things. The same thing with mental health. If you just take a medication, okay, you're addressing one part of it. But combine that medication with talking to a therapist. Now, combine those two with another modality. Combine it with the understanding of how to naturally calm yourself going through a panic attack. Because you don't want to just rely on medication. You don't want to just rely on just chemical dependency. Because at some point, you're going to be challenged. You're going to be tested, and you're going to want to reach for another higher dose and a higher dose. At some point, you're going to reach the highest possible dose. So what really turned the tide for me was having that thirst of developing a solid understanding of what I can do with my own understanding and reading and finding new things, learning about meditation, learning about grounding, learning about being mindful, what it truly means to have breathing exercises and doing them. So you can harness your own power. You can harness your own abilities to downregulate, which is ultimately like what I really needed, was to not be in fight or flight mode. But none of that would have come in hand if I didn't. I would never found any of those resources. I would never would have had the thirst for knowledge to read about this stuff and continue to read and gather more tools if I didn't go talk to a therapist.
Yeah,
and that's ultimately what I really advocate for guys and gals to do. You know, if you want to be a true professional in the military, you read, you seek out knowledge. If you want to be a true professional of your own life, of your own way forward, you can do the same thing.
I want to tell people one of the biggest things as well is your diet. Do a lot of research into it, but your diet, your gut, it has been linked directly to your brain as far as your ability to basically just the chemical balance of your brain. Yeah. If you have an MD or you're any kind of medical background, do not prosecute me over what I'm about to say. Okay. I'm spitballing based on whatever stupid knowledge I have jumbled around in my brain, but
Or reach out and come on the podcast and put all that knowledge out. I'm the same way.
But you know, when your brain gets to a point, so your frontal lobe cortex is responsible for your attention span, your ability to stay on task, to reason, to work through things, and then it's also responsible for the release of, I believe, both chemicals, serotonin and dopamine, at least dopamine. I, I think serotonin as well. Either way, these are things that are in short supply.
Feel good things.
Yeah. These are things that are in short supply for people who have depression. So oftentimes what they find in a lot of people that have depression is an atrophied or a lack of your frontal cortex to produce, you know, the chemicals that your brain and your body needs. Okay, so like Hefe described, this is a holistic approach. You're not going to get to this point by any one means of attack, one course of action. But what is important to know is that your gut controls so many things about your body. And if you look at I'm going to get straight to the chase without giving you a science lesson. Cut out processed sugar. Cut out processed sugar. I'm telling you, that shit will cripple you mentally. I can't even describe the difference. My entire life, I have consumed copious amounts of sugar. I'm amazed I'm not a diabetic. I love candy. I do. Cut that shit out and stop pumping your body full of processed sugar. The drinks, the garbage food, the whatever it is, cut it out. And I'm telling you, what is going to happen to your brain will astound you. On top of that, exercise. Do all that good shit, because exercise, we already know that it releases serotonin and dopamine into the body. But just simply changing how you approach food and what you put into your body, that includes alcohol. I'm not going to preach at anybody. I like to drink alcohol too, but I had to really, really, really back off of that and take a long pause from that, because, you know, what am I trying to do? I'm putting these medications in my body, but then I'm going to put a depressant into my body as well. No, that's just stupid. What do I want to achieve here? So you need to think about what you're putting into your body as far as liquid and food. It will make a massive difference.
Yeah. It's very true, man.
You know, I can't say that I have anything else more to talk on this subject. I wanted to talk about this specifically because of the message I saw, but then I was like, you know, this is a good time to get something out anyways and talk about this. I'm just glad you could join, man.
I'm glad. And I have one last thing. When we started talking about it, when we were in the other, we couldn't get Craig to be a good robot, but I want to.
Just so everybody knows, Craig is the guy who records us. It's a bot. And this fucking thing will not cooperate, dude. It's just like, Craig will jump in and out of sessions and,
he's like, oh, you want me to record? I guess I'll leave now. God damn it, Craig. But, we need our own studio guy.
That'd be nice.
We're gonna upgrade. We're gonna have our own, freaking facility here in 14 years.
Hell yeah.
Real state of the art. But before, the last thing I want to hit up on is, of course, a lot of things lead to depression. But one of the most prevalent things that I've encountered is job satisfaction and the feeling like you don't even have control of your life. Why? Because we for the vast majority of us, we work in this wonderful military organization where we have to serve out a contract. And I understand that. But one thing I understand now that I've gone a little further in my journey on healing is you don't owe anybody any goddamn thing when it comes to your fucking life.
Yes.
You don't have to continue this path serving if you aren't 100% into it. If it's not what you want to do, if it's no longer in your heart, if it's no longer brings you the professional joy and development, understand that it's going to continue to eat at your core and never re-enlist because you feel trapped. Ladies and gentlemen, I have breaking news that I think all of you should hear. You were successful before the military, and you will be successful after. And ultimately, this mechanism, the military, it's only good if the people serving in it genuinely want to be there. and they love what they're doing. If the passion is gone, if you want to leave, there is nothing wrong with that. Develop your plan methodically. Yeah. Work on what your exit strategy is going to be, what you're going to do afterwards. Take your time. If you still have two years left on your contract, use those 2 years to plan your life perfectly for what you're going to do. If you have 4 years, 5 years, you don't have to live your life feeling like you're doing something you hate. Understand that you're going to exit and do everything you can to serve honorably, to live a life with purpose and meaning, but be selfish and know your fucking plan. Plan it inside and out.
Yeah.
You owe it to yourself.
You do. I have guys that tell me all the time. Yeah. They go, Chief, I'm thinking about getting out, but First Sergeant's taking a shit on me and telling me, fuck First Sergeant. I say, thank you for your service. You served your country, and very few people do. In the military, anyways.
Yeah.
Thank you for your service. It is okay to get out.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. You owe it to yourself to plan. And while you're still in, don't be bitter about it. Know that you still have time to do everything you can to be a positive contributing member to the force, to your brothers and sisters in arms. Be fully invested in your service, but also be committed to your life afterwards. Start planning. There's nothing wrong with doing planning for college. There's nothing wrong with planning for the next job, doing college while you're still in. If you need any help and need guidance and want people to point you in the right direction, there are so many resources. And if you absolutely can't figure something out, hit us up on the messages. Be like, Jefe, I fucking hate it. I won't get out. I don't know what to do. And I'll be like, hey, fucking Jimmy, awesome. Here's what I suggest you do. But ultimately, be positive. Yeah. Positive anything is better than negative anything. Don't be the miserable motherfucker. Know that you're a happy individual and you're going to be successful. You're going to thrive. You were meant to. You're not going to fucking falter. It's going to be okay. But start living your life today. Not hoping and wishing and praying for when you ETS and for when you retire. Start living your fucking life today. Now, I'm not saying go to Bragg Boulevard and fucking jump on the first fucking single mom you see in a trailer park.
He's not saying it either.
Hefe did that, so y'all motherfuckers wouldn't have to. So don't do that. Just plan and live a beautiful life, people. And that's all I got to say. Fucking, yeah.
Amen, no. Brother. It's worth it. Life is worth living.
Yes.
It is. It is a beautiful thing. Life is worth living. Live it to its fullest. Don't be held back any longer. Say, why? I identify the problem. I am broken. Start looking for a solution. Whatever it takes, survive until you can get your head above the clouds and then thrive.
Yeah. That's it for me.
All right, man.
All right. Until next time, take care of each other.
Peace.
Goodbye.